Okay.
Well, I had gone through different periods where I hired a nanny for the baby and was driving a cab, getting a GI Bill at the same time. And so I continued my studies. I continued that way. And then I moved in with another girl, another person who had another child, and we shared the expenses of a maid in the house. Eventually, that did not work out all too well, but I continued for until I gradually, I think in my senior year, my son went to live with my sister, who lived in the Bronx. I did that even though I would have preferred he live with my mother. She wasn't feeling well enough to do it. And my sister had a very strange husband who eventually played a role in my son coming back to live with me several years later. But nevertheless, when I graduated from college, February 49, and by then, by the way, I was a chemistry major. I had switched from pre-med to chemistry for the simple reason I had become my objective was to get a degree in biochemistry. I was studying under what they call was GI Bill for disabled veterans, and you had to have a very specific vocational objective, and pre-med was not achievable in the time that was allotted to me, medical school. So biochemistry with a master's was the objective. And in fact, in 49, I was accepted at Penn in physiological chemistry. And I had suffered basically what amounted to a slipped disc, a herniated disc, and I was admitted to the hospital here. And as a consequence of that episode, I had to drop out of school. And then I went back to New York, and then I eventually got a job, different jobs. Very difficult to get a job as a chemist in those days. I was working as a sales correspondent for a while for something called LaSalle University, which was really a mail order correspondence school.
Selling the
coastal? No, I was the person, my typing again, you see, I was really a glorious clerk. But what I did was I had to take the coupons that people sent in when they clipped them out of a Popular Science magazine or something like that, and get all the information on them, look them up in the phone book and what have you, and put together the information for the salesman. And then these sales telemarketing people would get on the phone and convince these people that they needed to either buy the course or they arrange an appointment to go see them. And as part of that deal, I got a free course in, I got to take a free course in stenography, which I was interested in. I learned, for a while, I learned shorthand, and I learned stenotype as well. Well, finally, I did get a job. I applied in several chemical companies. I couldn't get a job, and I don't know whether it was discrimination or what. Back in those days, a fairly strong racial religious quotas. Even 5 years later, I can remember Smith, Klein, and French. It was rather unusual for Jews to get hired. And people may forget that nowadays, but it was very much the case back when I was still in college. But I didn't pay any attention to that. I eventually got a job working in a small company called Evans Cosmetics R&D. It was a consulting firm, and they did research projects. And I got hired as a junior chemist.
So you really hadn't identified yourself as a chemist in some way at this juncture?
Well, I had this degree in chemistry, and I got this other job. I went to Evans Chemical, so finally, after the sales job, sales correspondence, I got this job, which was not that far away, and I went in there, and one of the things that came out when I was working for them, at one point, they brought me into one of these conferences with a client, and I was asked to take notes, and they didn't know, of course, that I had this little flair for taking notes and what have you. And then I came back with a report. They were overwhelmed the fact that I could digest anything that was said there. So that aptitude must have been there. But before I'd been with them for 3 or 4 months, I then was offered a job as the laboratory assistant to Professor Louis P. Hammond at Columbia, where I'd graduated from. But that was purely a coincidence, was that my own cousin was his PhD student.
This is long ago.
Sidney Bernhardt.
French.
Was Louis P. Hammond's...
Your mother's French.
My mother's, yeah, a first cousin of mine. And Sidney was a brilliant scientist. He's a professor of molecular biology at the University of Oregon, I think. And knew that I was interested in getting back into school somehow, and they needed this lab assistant, so I got hired. And so I signed up as a graduate student again. However, I soon found out that I certainly was not well suited for physical chemistry, but it was there in that lab that I first got exposed to, first of all, Louis P. Hammond was the editor of the McGraw-Hill book series. He had a fabulous library, and secondly, I used to do some of the literature searching. They had a full set of chemical abstracts there. And then on top of that, they had this closet full of chemicals that had been synthesized by generations of students at Columbia, thousands of compounds. One day, after I'd been struggling to make a series of compounds for these, we were doing acid-base catalysis one of their sponsors was Roman Haas, as a matter of fact. They were producing these ion exchange resins, and they were using the ion exchange resins as a catalytic bed. I had to make this series of compounds, and I saw this closet and found out that there were dozens of these things already there, and all I had to do was purify them, I wouldn't have to make them. So I got very well incented to create an index to this file of compounds. And that's eventually, after several explosions in the lab and other incidents, Dr. Hammett realized that I was not really going to make it to as a physical chemist, at least according to his standards, and I decided that I would look for other work.
So you had actually got a publication in the Journal of the American Chemical Society.
Yeah, that's right, working with him, yeah. Right, yeah. Well, I think they were very generous to include me as an author, and but you know, I did the lab work, and I understood what was going on at the time, but I don't think that I contributed any of the significant ideas to this project. Certainly Sidney Bernhardt was the graduate student, and of course Professor Hammond. But there you are, there's my first paper. And I told Professor Hammett that I was going to look for other work, and what had happened was that I applied I decided to combine. Somebody told me, why don't you combine your chemistry with your all this knowledge you had of stenography and everything. I applied for a job, and I think I was accepted to be secretary to the director of research at, I think, the Ethel Corporation in Detroit, which for them, I guess, would have been great if I could find a secretary with science training. But in, I think it was, I forget the exact date, but I think it was end of 1950, or the beginning of 1951, I went to an American Chemical Society, the Diamond Jubilee meeting. I'd never been to an ACS meeting before. And I guess that was part of this job thing. Maybe that was where I got the interview for this job. While I was there, I stumbled into the Division of Chemical Literature. And it sort of became apparent to me that there were people who actually made a living doing this kind of work. And Jim Perry was chairing the session, I believe, and James Perry was, he was one of the pioneers in my field, and had just published a book on how to teach yourself scientific Russian. And he was about to publish a book with Bob Casey of the Schaefer Pen Company on punch cards, which punch cards are applications of science and industry. And I guess Jim was chairman or something of the Division of Chemical Literature in those days, and after he got through, the session broke, he came down off the platform, and I walked up to him, and I said to him, can you tell me, how do you get a job in this racket? To me, it was like, I couldn't believe people got paid for that. I would have done it for nothing. So, he smiled, and he was a giant of a man, I still have contact with his wife. He's long since dead. Ruth Perry is a very nice lady, and she lives in Tucson, Arizona. Jim was, I think, a chemical engineer by training, and he said, okay, I'll be in touch with you, and to make a long story short, he arranged to meet me, and he was then working at MIT. He had this project at MIT, and I think Madeline Berry and Alan Kent were working with him. Alan Kent eventually went on to become the dean of the School of Library and Information Science in Pittsburgh. Madeline Berry is still she's still involved part-time, I think, in the field. She worked at the National Science Foundation. She was one of the grant administrators at one point. He said to me, I think that we could find a job for somebody on this project. And so then Jim Perry arranged to come back several weeks. He met me at my mother's house in the Bronx. I'll never forget it because she fixed him this fantastic meal. And he loved Jewish cooking. And he then presented me with a copy of his new book on punch cards. And he said, okay, we're going to hire you. He called me up a week or so later, and he said, can you hang on for a few more weeks? By then, I had to turn down. I had to turn down this job in Detroit. He calls me up, and he says, well, things have changed. Would you be interested in a job in Baltimore? We can't pull it off in Boston, but there's a job in Baltimore. And next thing I knew, I was down at Johns Hopkins University being interviewed by Sanford Larkey, who was the director of the Welch Medical Library, and who was also director of the machine indexing project sponsored by the then Armed Forces Army Medical Library. And I didn't know until I got hired that I really wasn't working for Jim Perry. And all Jim was a friend of Sam Larkey's, and maybe out of kindness or whatever, instead of just turning me down, he didn't have the job, he figured that I was a good person. They needed a replacement on this project for Wilhelmina Himwich, who was a brain physiologist, and she and I eventually became very good friends. I still see her occasionally. She's retired. She was the scientist on this project that had been started 2 or 3 years before I got there.
The thought behind the project being?
It was a project which has been described at great length in the literature, which the predecessor to the National Library of Medicine, which was then Army Medical Library, Armed Forces Medical Library, and then eventually National Library of Medicine, we're studying new ways of dealing with the medical literature. The methods that we're using were hopelessly out of date. The index catalog was years behind. They had just started recently the current list of medical literature, and it was having problems. So all sorts of machine methods of searching literature were being considered. And when I came to the project, they had done very little with actual machine methods. They had done something with coding. They'd studied the abstracting and indexing coverage of medical journals. When I got there, we got hot and heavy into the problem of subject heading analysis. And we together developed what is today the MESH, Medical Subject Heading Authority List. Well, that predecessor work goes back to that project. And Dr. Larkey hired me. It turns out, rather strangely, because I found this only after I left the project, or was leaving, that he hired me because Professor Hammett had told him that I was a very hard-working, dedicated individual, but not a particularly original thinker. Okay. And this was exactly what Dr. Larkey wanted. Of course, they didn't get what he bargained for. So, my mother had given me some money for graduation. I'd given all that to my sister to take care of my son. The woman who was supposed to be was subsequently to become my second wife, we split up because she didn't want to go to Baltimore unless I got married, and I wasn't ready to get married again. So I went there and I became a bachelor again, and I lived in Baltimore and worked at the project. So they needed a chemist on this project, by the way, because the first assignment I got was working with the enzyme and chemical nomenclature. So during this 2 years on this project, I always say that practically everything that I've ever done in some way or another is attributable to the thought processes that went on in basic research. And I met all kinds of interesting people who were stimulants to a lot of the things that I've done. Chauncey Leak was chairman of what they call the Honorary Committee of Consultants. The committee were all the outstanding figures in the field at the time. I mean, it was, for a young guy that didn't know anything about it, it was really an incredible thing. And Verna Clapp, the chief assistant librarian of Congress, Mortimer Talby, also a library of Congress, and started his own business. And Brad Rogers, I met, of course, through that project, he had then been appointed the new director of the Army Medical Library, Seymour Tain, you know, all sorts of people that I met. Stell Brodman, who became quite a respected historian of medicine herself, even though she was basically a medical librarian. She combined them in a way that nobody that I know ever has. And so Sam Rocky was a dilettante. While he was alive, I didn't really, wasn't able to say too much about him. He was a man who, he had problems with alcohol, too. He came in 9 o'clock every day, would engage me in conversation about his wartime experiences, and his interest in Elizabethan medicine during the day, and we worked in the afternoon. We worked on subject heading analysis. He loved that, and we talk about origins of words and what have you. And we worked on the WHO classification. We assigned all these category numbers to the subject headings. I mean, there's a whole literature on this. And at 5 o'clock, he would go home, and at 5 o'clock, I would begin research. Eventually, they got the 101 statistical machine came in there, and I started playing around with it, and I invented various systems for searching literature with punch card machines. There's a whole series of things that went on.
So unlike the Columbia lab and the chemical company, you really found your métier.
Yeah, I mean, then I really felt, I didn't mind working 24 hours a day. At first I lived in the red light district down in Baltimore, because when I first came there, Dr. Larkey had introduced me to somebody, got me an apartment. I moved into a very nice room on near Charles Street, in a very nice section of Baltimore. And I wanted to play the saxophone. The people objected to that, so eventually I had to move out of there. I could tell some funny stories about Dr. Larkey and how I was evicted because there was a Republican judge, and Larkey came down to defend me. And when he saw Larkey, whose wife was a Democratic National Committee member, he immediately said, "Get out!" And I decided to move to some place nobody would bother me. I got this room on the corner of Mount Royal and Charles Street, overlooking the drugstore. And it was a huge room, the size of this office, basically, higher ceilings. And the landlord was the retired pharmacist who was a collected parakeets. And he had another room the size of this with 100 cages full of these parakeets, all of which were illegal at the time because they had these laws against them spreading psittacosis and everything. But he let me play the saxophone anytime I wanted. And eventually what happened was one time I had gone away for the weekend and Dr. Larkey tried to get a hold of me, and he had come down to look for me. And when he saw where I was living, he was terribly upset. I mean, in a way, he said, "This is no place for a respectable young man," because it really was the red light district. In fact, the lady downstairs from me was a stripper. And he said, "Why don't you get yourself a room right near Johns Hopkins?" He found me a room right over the drugstore opposite Johns Hopkins Hospital emergency entrance. I'm going to tell you, that was an experience. And I had a room, an apartment that was like the size of a closet. But I was within stone's throw, literally, of the Welch Library. And that's where I finished up. And I worked there literally day and night. And eventually, I think one of the culminating experiences was that in March of 53, we had agreed to sponsor a symposium on our work, public symposium. And Sam Rocky was supposed to give a talk, and I was supposed to give a talk, and one of the other fellows in the project was supposed to give a talk. As it turned out, both of them copped out. Larky claimed illness, and the other guy did too. So I had to give all the papers. And it was a one-day symposium. We had 300 people came. It was called the first symposium on machine methods and scientific documentation. There's a brief write-up in a journal called Special Libraries by Marjorie Hislop. And it was a result of that symposium. We had one of the newspapers sent a reporter around, and the vice president of the university had been our opening speaker, Lowell J. Reed. And he was the one that used this expression, man is going to be drowned in a flood of paper. And this thing hit the United Press or something like that, and it got national coverage. And we started getting letters from all over the country asking for information on this symposium. And one of the letters that I got was from a retired vice president of Shepherd Citation, W.C. Adair. And he told me that when Shepherd Citations had originally been in New York, he had been approached by some groups in the Engineering Society or something like that about the idea of organizing literature using their methods. But I didn't know what Shepherd's was, so I went down to the Enoch Pratt Free Library, went into the reference room somewhere, and I found Shepherd Citations, and I literally screamed eureka, because I had been trying to devise a system around review articles, which Chauncey Leak had been pushing me to. He kept saying, review articles are extremely important to scientists. Study them carefully. Find out why they're so successful. And I had done this analysis, kind of a linguistic analysis of a review, in which essentially what you do is if you parse a review article, you take each sentence becomes an indexing statement. Now, Henry Small recently has just reversed it. With citation indexing, we are now going into a citing article and pulling out a citing sentence. I was taking the review article and analyzing each sentence and tagging it with the article that it cited. So when I saw the Shepherd Citations, I found the methodology that I needed for linking all these things, for indexing all these cited references that were cited in reviews. And so I began a correspondence with Mr. Adair. However, I was out of the project within 3 months of that time. I was literally fired. Dr. Larky terminated my employment because he was angry as could be with me for a lot of reasons, including he claimed that I refused to stop publishing something called Contents in Advance. Contents in Advance I had started the year before. And what it was the contents pages of all the library and documentation journals.
The year before, it's 52.
Yeah, in 52.
Just a second. Yeah.